You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Katie Frankowitz. University of Washington human rights researchers have found that Border Patrol and ICE have been tapping into license plate data, and some local police departments that share this information say it caught them off guard. KUOW's Gustavo Sagrero reports.
This report from the UW Center for Human Rights looks into the expanding use of license plate readers used to track crime and found that at least 8 Washington state law enforcement agencies have been leaving the door wide open to federal immigration agencies. That includes the Yakima, Lakewood, and Auburn police departments. Angelina Godoy leads the UW Center.
That's really problematic. And even if they tighten their settings now, if the technology continues to have those vulnerabilities, and it does, I would be worried that the abuse will continue.
Godoy says if the data sharing is left unchecked, it could potentially run local law enforcement afoul of state law. She says it also highlights how little some law enforcement agencies understand the consequences of using these tools. In response, some local police departments have shut down access for national use and say they'll continue to monitor attempts from outside access.
I'm Gustavo Sagrero reporting.
Washington State's congressional delegation is raising concerns about the U.S. military's recent attacks on boats in the Caribbean. The Associated Press reports at least 32 people have been killed since early September. The Trump administration says the boats were transporting drugs. Republican Congressman Michael Baumgartner from Spokane sits on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He addressed the issue on Sunday in a briefing with reporters.
I don't have a problem with drug smugglers being sent to the bottom of the ocean. I do have concerns about the process. So, you know, Congress does need to be involved when military action is taken. So I'll be looking forward to getting updates from the White House. And when we do return to D.C., discussing it amongst the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
The attacks have occurred without any legal investigation or a traditional declaration of war from Congress. Representative Adam Smith, a Democrat from Bellevue and the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee, is calling for a hearing on the Trump administration's deadly strikes. Smith says the administration has failed to provide a legal basis for killing suspected traffickers instead of detaining them. Washington State is leading the charge against a collegiate sports bill opponents believe would benefit big conferences and TV partners at the expense of athletes. Both Senator Maria Cantwell and Representative Michael Baumgartner are fighting the SCORE Act in D.C. SBR's Eliza Billingham has more.
The SCORE Act stands for Student Compensation and Opportunity Through Rights and Endorsements Act. It requires schools to provide things like mental health counseling, financial literacy training, and healthcare benefits to college athletes. It also includes antitrust exemptions for the NCAA and financial restructuring that Cantwell says might encourage schools to disinvest in women's and Olympic sports. She told reporters this week that the SCORE Act is not a step in the right direction for the changing world of college athletics.
We want to increase the number of student athletes. We want to increase the number of scholarships for women. We want to increase the number of scholarships for Olympic athletes. We want a healthy ecosystem.
Cantwell has introduced an alternative bill called the Student Athlete Fairness and Enforcement, or SAFE Act. It amends the Sports Broadcasting Act, which dictates how media rights can be sold. She says her version would allow more revenue to benefit more schools and more sports. Neither the SCORE Act or the SAFE Act allow student athletes to collectively bargain. A senator who supports Cantwell's bill says it's unlikely anything would pass Congress before the 2026 midterms. I'm Eliza Billingham, reporting.
The driverless taxi company Waymo is testing its autonomous vehicles, or AVs, in Seattle and Bellevue, with human drivers behind the wheel. But as KNKX's Anna Maria Yanni reports, deployment of their driverless taxi service would require a state law update.
Stefan Winkler is the Seattle Department of Transportation's Mobility Solutions Manager. He says officials are discussing allowing driverless taxis, but it's too early to say when.
For commercial operations to actually begin here, the state law would have to be updated to create a process for paid AV rides.
Democratic State Representative Shelley Klobaugh wants to see more safety guardrails put in place before the state allows a driverless taxi service.
And I think having specific safety requirements that need to be met before they're out on the street would go a long way in establishing consumer confidence.
Klobaugh is pushing for a bill that would hold autonomous vehicles and the companies that operate them to the same standards as human drivers following a crash. I'm Anna Mariani reporting.
An upcoming hatchery closure is expected to most strongly affect Southwest Washington recreational steelhead fisheries. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife announced in June that they would be closing the Skamania hatchery in Washougal after not receiving its full 2-year budget request from the state legislature. The funding the department did receive was not enough to sustain current hatchery operations. The Skamania hatchery produces summer and winter steelhead that are released into Southwest Washington rivers for recreational fishing. That's more than 300,000 steelhead a year. Operations at the hatchery will begin to slow over the next year. The process of closing the facility will take 3 years. The Washougal and Beaver Creek hatcheries will take over some steelhead production, but Washington Fish and Wildlife estimates the closure of the Skamania hatchery will reduce the total production of steelhead in Washington by about 161,000 fish per year. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. PacifiCorp has agreed to pay millions of dollars to Oregon wineries and vineyards harmed by wildfires in 2020. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
93 winery and vineyard owners accused PacifiCorp of negligence because it did not cut power during a windstorm over the 2020 Labor Day weekend. PacifiCorp has agreed to pay them $125 million. PacifiCorp owns Pacific Power, Oregon's second largest electric utility. Multiple lawsuits have blamed the utility for sparking wildfires in the Santiam Canyon, as well as parts of southern and coastal Oregon. Those fires destroyed hundreds of homes and blanketed Oregon in smoke for days. Wine grapes exposed to wildfire smoke can make for ashy-tasting wine, rendering it unsellable. Red wine grapes are particularly vulnerable. PacifiCorp still faces ongoing litigation with thousands of victims who were harmed by the 2020 wildfires. It's expected to pay out billions of dollars. I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
A research summit in Newport, Oregon, was postponed because of the federal government shutdown. The Hatfield Marine Science Center holds an event each year to promote partnerships across its many programs. About 150 students, scientists, and staff were expected to attend the Tuesday and Wednesday gathering. The center is run by Oregon State University, but five state and federal agencies, including the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, have on-site operations. The Research Summit website says the Planning Committee will reconvene when the government reopens. You're listening to KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. We turn now to news from across the five counties in KMUN's listening area. Four people have applied to fill an empty position on the Warrenton City Commission, and next week, the public will have a chance to meet them. A public meet-and-greet will be held on Monday, October 27th at 5 p.m. at City Hall in Warrenton. The City Commission plans to vote to fill the vacant position number 3 seat at a meeting the following day. The position number 3 seat became open after longtime City Commissioner Tom Dyer announced he would be stepping down because he has cancer. Among the applicants looking to take his place on the commission is Mike Moha, the current chair of the Warrenton Planning Commission. He was previously chair of the Warrenton Business Association and has a long history of involvement in community and governmental activities in Warrenton. Grant Lehman is a business systems analyst for Columbia Memorial Hospital in Astoria and is also facilitator for the Small Business Management Program for Clatsop County SBDC. He's been a volunteer firefighter in Pacific County, Washington. Applicant Brooke Terry serves on the Parks Advisory Board and previously was on the Warrenton's Urban Renewal Advisory Committee. She founded the nonprofit Warrenton Parks Alliance to funnel money directly to Warrenton's parks. Nicole Bayan has served as vice chair of Warrenton's Urban Renewal Advisory Committee and is the chair of the nonprofit Spruce Up Warrenton. She also currently serves on the city's planning commission. The person the city commissioners select to replace Dyer will serve out the rest of his term, which runs through December 31st, 2028. There has been an invasion. On the beach in Seaside, pale, pinkish-orange, worm-like blobs several inches long are everywhere. These are skin-breathing sea cucumbers, and their presence here now fits the season, but is still a little unusual. I spoke with Tiffany Booth, the assistant manager at the Seaside Aquarium, to learn more. So I've never heard of this type of sea cucumber before. Why are we seeing them on the beach right now?
Well, they're funny-looking creatures, but at the moment they are washing ashore in Seaside in the thousands. And it's nothing to be alarmed about. It's just the ocean conditions at the moment are perfect for uprooting these guys and washing them ashore. So we've got really big seas, huge surf, and then it's also coupled with some really low evening tides. And so these guys they live in the intertidal zone down to about 240 feet. But the surf is churning up so much sand right now because it's so big and powerful that it's actually uprooting these guys and washing them ashore onto the high tide line.
Is this a normal occurrence?
It's a little unusual in the quantity that we're seeing. You know, a lot of times we'll see a few here and there scattered along the tide line. We don't typically get thousands of them along the tide line. It does happen from time to time. It just has to occur. It only occurs in this quantity when the ocean conditions are just right, unless you're a sea cucumber.
Right, unless you're a sea cucumber. And that was my next question. Are we witnessing a tragedy?
For the sea cucumber, yes. But it is kind of a natural cycle of things. It happens from time to time. It's not making a dent on their population. It's not devastating to the species. It's just maybe devastating to the individual.
So it does make me think about when we have other times when things wash up in large quantities on the beach. Are these guys going to start smelling at some point?
So these guys aren't going to smell. They're, you know, most of their body content is water. So they're when they dry up or rot, they're not going to emit a smell. Even seabirds don't really come and eat these guys. There's just not a lot of nutrition to them. They will create a little bit of a nutrient boost for the small invertebrates that eat things along the tide lines.
For people who are out maybe exploring on the beach, is it safe to touch the sea cucumbers?
You can. They're a little slimy. They're a little gooey. They're not harmful to humans at all. I would kind of avoid having your pet eat too many of them or any at all. It won't harm them. Might make them have a stomach ache, though.
How big are the skin-breathing sea cucumbers that you're seeing wash up right now?
So the ones that are washing ashore right now are maybe about a half an inch, but they can get up to almost about six inches long. So these are just kind of the younger ones that aren't living as deep as kind of probably more of the older ones.
Since they're here on the beach, is the aquarium going out and collecting any?
When do wash ashore, they're still alive, so we can pick some of them up and bring them into the aquarium. They'll live for a while and show our visitors kind of what they are and explain to them where you can find them if they're out on the beach. So we do have a few on display right now.
So obviously the sea cucumbers are on the beach right now. What are other things that people should maybe keep an eye out for this time of year?
The biggest is the surf and the sneaker waves. When there's a warning out there, just make sure that you never turn your back to the ocean. And this time of year, I usually suggest you walk on the dry sand. And even then, you're not safe from those sneaker waves. I actually witnessed two people get rolled today in the surf because they were just normal. It's a beautiful day. They're out enjoying the beach, but they're just not paying attention to how far up those waves are coming. With that said, all sorts of fun stuff washes up this time of year. So you get all different types of jellyfish species. You know, sometimes you'll come across weird fish, weird invertebrates. It's one of my favorite times of year to walk the beach and look along the high tide line, but you just have to be careful.
Tiffany, thank you so much for taking the time to answer my questions.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
If you're just joining us, I was speaking with Tiffany Booth, the assistant manager at the Seaside Aquarium, about the thousands of skin-breathing sea cucumbers that have washed up on the beach at Seaside recently. If you do venture out to see them for yourself, be aware that the National Weather Service is still warning of beach hazards through late Thursday night. They say sneaker waves are possible, and waves can run up significantly farther on the beach than normal, including over rocks and jetties. It took years, but a new community center is now open in Ilwaco on Washington's Long Beach Peninsula. The Dylan Jude Harrell Community Center held an open house last week, welcoming kids into the center for the first time. Claire Brunke, the center's executive director, called it a surreal and exciting moment. The building includes licensed childcare space for infants and toddlers, rooms for elementary, after-school, and summer programs, and an outdoor learning and play space. It's the first of several planned phases at the site. The property is being leased from the Port of Ilwaco. The center's namesake, Dylan Harrell, died in 2020 from a rare and incurable brain cancer. Dylan's father, Jeff Harrell, is a board member for the center. He said it took 4 years since the plan to build a community center was first announced. He believes now it is going to provide crucial services for the community. In the coming months, he and others involved with the center hope construction will begin on the facility's full-size gymnasium. Other future phases of the center call for the construction of an indoor swimming pool and field house at the site. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, please get in touch with us. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, intern Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz.